to take a couple of questions. And as I mentioned, any questions that we aren't able to get to today, we will get you answers in writing and post those on our website. And we will, of course, announce when all the materials from the webcast are available. So I guess we'll go ahead and take some questions. Lauren, if you want to kick us off.
Great. So Jennifer, there were a couple of questions about the financial modeling that you did. And the first question is, are the financial models that you mentioned publicly available? And the participants referring to the financial models of adaptation, particularly the one by Sam Merrill from the New England Environmental Finance Center and Paul Kirshen from Battelle.
I wouldn't personally, I do have copies of what they did, but rather than me directly share them, in my presentation I have the link to the article in ESRI, ArcUser Magazine, which is an ESRI publication, that has a bunch of information there. And if that's not enough, I would encourage you to contact Sam directly. I know that, some of it is research, maybe he may not want to directly share, but I'm sure he'd be able to share with you how he kind of had done it. And if someone just wanted to know in general more about it, they could feel free to call me. I don't think I gave my number, but it's 860-424-3295. But I'm sure Sam and Paul would be happy to talk to people directly as well. And you can actually watch the webcast on the ICLEI and ccclimatechange.com websites and see, in their words, how they did it.
Okay, great. Thanks. And then the next question related to financial modeling. Can you provide some additional detail on what went into your assessment of costs to not adapting to the identified potential climate impacts? And did that economic assessment help to motivate action?
I don't want to speak exactly to how it was done, but I'll give an overview. So basically what they did was through our state GIS and through the town of Groton GIS modeling, and then knowing the U.S. Army Corps of Engineer, building damage, they could superimpose different events. So say we did, 10 inches of sea level rise and a 10-year storm, something like that. Then using the parcel-based data, the value of the properties, they could get an estimation of how much damage would happen when one of those such type storms occurred. If you read the articles and watch the presentations, you can get so much more information than I'm sharing. But basically what we did is we worked with the town and with the folks in the workshop to pick some areas that were a little vulnerable. We picked downtown Mystic, which is anybody that's been to Connecticut has gone to Mystic Seaport and Mystic Village and gone to the on the whaling ships and all that. So it's a huge, huge downtown shopping and scenic historic area. So that was one of the areas that we looked at that would be very vulnerable to flooding. We also picked a parcel that was undeveloped, and we looked at what would be the issues involved. Does it have a natural value as a buffer? And then we also looked at some other areas in the town. And then we had some folks from Woods Hole come and actually talk to us about what some of the adaptation strategies could be to protect those areas. And then during the workshop, people, kind of selected what the things they wanted to see modeled where. And then they did some more crunching, Sam and Merrill and his team talked more crunching to figure out what the cost would be. So you could definitely take, if you didn't do anything, if you didn't put up, any kind of barriers for the storms, you didn't do anything, what would that storm cost, a relative amount of property damage versus if you did do something. So this is actually, their project was actually funded by EPA. So I know that they've been working with some other communities that you can get more information from them as well. And Sam Merrill's with the New England Financial Institute. It's actually out of Maine.
Okay, we're actually really close on time here, so I understand that folks on the line listening in may need to go. And if you do, please consider taking a few minutes to fill out our optional survey at the end and tell us, what resources you need and what challenges you're facing with adaptation. And if folks can stay on for just another couple of minutes, I think we have time. We can probably do one more question per speaker, and then we'll address the rest in writing.
All right, the next question is for Steve Seidel from the Pew Center. This participant asked, it sounds like there are a lot of great projects in different federal agencies, but most of the projects you mentioned were not interagency. What kind of issues or information do you think are required for coordination between federal agencies?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and clearly a lot of these areas cut across different agencies. The way we structured our report, we list it by agency, but when you get into the details, when you actually look at the descriptions, you'll find that for the most part, a large number of these initiatives within agencies involve other agencies. So, for example, the Department of Interior and NOAA entered into an interagency agreement to make sure that they're fully coordinating the RISAs, the regional efforts on the part of NOAA with the climate science centers, the regional efforts on the part of the Department of Interior. So there really has been a great deal of interagency coordination, even within the activities that have occurred to date.
Okay, great. Thanks, Steve. And then our last question for Allison, what progress has been made on the Federal Adaptation Task Force recommendation to develop a national climate service? Is it more than just the online data clearinghouse?
Yes, it is more than just the online data clearinghouse. And actually, you know, that's just one thing, sort of aspect of that I mentioned in our conversation today. But it is much broader, and we're working to sort of build off of, you know, Steve's response as far as improving coordination among all the federal agencies at the national level. We're beginning to have discussions on how to, you know, although a lot of there is, as Steve mentioned, a lot of interagency coordination on service projects already going on. We're working to improve that further. That will help, you know, feed into, you know, creating much more of a united, you know, national approach to both the services we provide on climate change and climate change adaptation, as well as improved science coordination as well. And there are continuing ongoing discussions related to that to move that forward.
Okay, I think that's all we have time for today. Thank you again to all of our speakers for your time and contributions. We're glad that you were able to come and share your expertise, knowledge, and resources. And thank you to everyone on the line for tuning in. If you haven't been able to participate in parts one and two of the webcast, please do check out the files on our website. You can listen to the audio and hear the presentations there as you walk through the slides. And we'll certainly announce through our listserv when the materials from this webcast will be available as well. We hope that you will continue to join us on future webcasts, and please take a minute or two to look at our survey and let us know what you think about future topics and your needs and challenges as you're working on adaptation in your community. So thank you, and we look forward to having you join us again soon.